Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Welcome to Spotcast Season 6, Episode 44. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined by Jaime Lopez Jr. in Seattle, Washington.
How's it going?
And Jonathan Kuhlein is missing in action. Missing. Jonathan couldn't be with us today. He had another appointment. Anyway, so starting off with some Doctor Who fact check. Sort of Doctor Who fact check. I was talking about Law and Order UK, which starred Jamie Bamber, and Bradley Walsh was the other person I couldn't remember. In fact, he was the DS Ronnie Brooks for the entire season, series of UK, which ran from 2009 to 2014. And if you know him, don't know him from that, but you may know him as Jodie Whittaker's, one of Jodie Whittaker's companions, the older gentleman companion that she had in that show. Mm-hmm. Well, that's the connection. What does DS stand for? I was wondering about that, because they all call them DS in the UK, right? In their cop shows?
Deputy Sheriff, perhaps, is what an acronym finder .com says. Hmm. Maybe I should do DS acronym British.
Yeah.
DC is Detective Constable. Maybe Detective Police. Sergeant.
Police ranks in the UK.
Foreigncrimedrama.com says...
yeah.
DS is Detective Sergeant. DI is Detective Inspector, and etc. Mm.
Oh, DI, yes, they do DI as well, yeah. Cool. I watched a ton of British TV show cop drama things, and one of my favorite ones is called, one's called Ashes to Ashes, and the other's called Life on Mars. First one's called Life on Mars, and the second one, Ashes to Ashes, was a follow-up. Mm-hmm. And it stars the guy who ended up playing the Master on the latest series of Doctor Who, John Stem, I think his name is. And it's about a cop who falls through a wormhole or time hole and ends up back in the 70s and has to deal with, you know, the whole way cops are back then. Really good show. But, I mean, like I said, I've watched a ton of British cop shows and I never really know. Yes, John Stem, I was correct. Yeah, 2006, 2007, only 2 years. Yeah, Beck, I guess they only did that. But yeah, he played DI, Sam Tyler. So he was a DI, not a DS. Cool.
And Ronnie, I think I didn't catch it. Given that you're in Canada, I wasn't sure if you were subscribing to like BritBox, that streaming service, or if they show it on like CBC or some other, BBC Canada or something.
Yeah, well, not CBC, but they might have showed it on Space or like City TV channel or something like that. I forget where I used to watch it. It was like regular TV. It was a lot, long before we had the streaming stuff, right? So, yeah. It's a good show. I mean, it says it's on Amazon, but I don't know where you can watch it. Yeah, because I noticed now you have to have that BritBox thing to watch all the nice shows, right? What does Just Watch say? Just Watch. Ooh. Just Watch Me. Yeah, and it was good because he played the cop in the 70s, and then the next series... called Ashes to Ashes, named after David Bowie songs, obviously. Ashes to Ashes was a female cop in the 80s, and again, she had to deal with all the misogyny and stuff like that as well, right? So, what was I looking up? Life on Mars, right? And there was an American version of it too, right? And it was weird because the American version was a two-season show as well, right? And how they ended it was... he wakes up and he's actually an astronaut in suspended animation on his way to Mars.
Okay.
That's the American version. They couldn't just leave it well enough alone, right? So yeah, I can only watch it on BritBox here in Canada. Yeah, that's too bad. It's a good show. Anyway, all right. Let's move on to the headlines. You got lots of headlines for us today. So what do you got first up?
First one up is the trailer for Orphan Black Echoes, starring Jessica Jones's own Kristen Ritter. Ooh. Also from Breaking Bad. It is apparently going to be June 23rd for the premiere date on AMC Plus. I have not looked yet to see where that's going to actually end up elsewhere, especially around the world. But it apparently takes place 37? Let me look at the article. Yeah, 37 years after the end of Orphan Black.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, considering Orphan Black was like now, right?
Like, yeah. So it's basically like Orphan Black 2049, right? Like, yeah. It's not that far off because it picks up in 2052. So,
lack of a better word, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know, it doesn't show where it's playing in Canada. Weird.
Is it not up on Just Watch yet? I haven't looked. Huh? Is it up on Just Watch? I didn't take a look.
No, I'm looking just now. It's got, Orphan Black is not available at the moment. Orphan Black Echoes. I guess I have to wait for it to come out, right?
Yeah.
Oh, AMC Plus. So it's probably on AMC here.
Maybe. There was some Better Call Saul stuff, like an animated series or something that was only on AMC Plus here, and it didn't show up on regular AMC as far as I know.
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
I think they ended up putting it on like YouTube or something sometime after. Like, it's bananas to figure out where some of this stuff goes in the cross promotions.
Yeah, sure is. It sure is bananas. Anyway, they just show like season one episode. Oh, wait. Season one, episode 8, 9, and 10. Oh, has it been out? It's not been out yet, though, you said, right?
Well, maybe, because I think some regions have already received it. Like, I think the Kiwis have it in New Zealand.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I'm a little unclear what the idea there is.
Yeah. I wonder if Jean McDonald's going to do a Sester cast with this one.
Oh, that's a good question.
It is a good question. That's why I asked it. Let's see.
You know, because if she's gonna go through that, then she should also do like, you know, Voyager +++ when it comes to Prodigy.
Yes, right? Maybe. So the pilot says it was aired on November 3rd, 2023.
Right, but like in limited territories.
Yeah, because episode 10 says again. Oh, you know what? I guess this is when it was listed in the app. It's not actually been broadcast yet. Okay. Very confusing. Very confusing. Yeah, there's nothing about it. So I wonder if anybody's actually seen it yet. Oh, well, let's see how they ruin that one. Although, Tatiana Maslany I don't know if Kristen Ritter is going to change characters, but maybe she will. Who knows? Mm-hmm. What other surprising news you got for us?
Yeah, there's a whole section here. I guess a mini section of Amazon related stuff. So, if you remember that Nicolas Cage was in Into the Spider-Verse as the noir version of Spider-Man, apparently he's going to take part in a live-action Amazon series as that character.
Hmm.
Doesn't have a premiere date, according to this article from The Verge. Amazon says it will premiere domestically on MGM Plus's linear channel before it gets old and outdated and they start streaming it on regular old Prime Video.
Right. So I'm confused. Into the Spider-Verse, is that the first one or the second one?
I think it was the first one, because I think Across the Spider-Verse is the most recent one.
Okay. All right.
I barely remember, because there were so many different Spider-Men, if he was in the second one or not, but he was definitely in the first.
Is there a third one coming?
I believe so. Animated? I guess spoilers for the second one. It ends on a hard cliffhanger.
Yeah, spoilers for that. Yes, that's true.
Cool. Spoilers, your download didn't break. That's just where the movie ends.
Yeah. All right, what's next?
Continuing along the path of all this stuff that Amazon is announcing, they're apparently going to do a live-action Tomb Raider show written and executive produced by Phoebe Waller-Bridge. You may know her from Fleabag. You may also remember her in Indiana Jones, the most recent one, The Dial of Destiny. I don't think it has a release date. Let me take a quick look. No release date, but as this article says here, from also from The Verge, like, the Fallout show hit over 65 million viewers. So they're like, really looking for the next hit of money coming in, right? And Tomb Raider's it's been decades and decades, right? It's getting up there like, you know, Ninja Turtles or Scooby-Doo, right? It might be one of those things that just so fundamentally part of the global culture that people will renew these series.
So is this The Legend of Lara Croft? Is that the one? Or
I don't think it has a title. They mentioned a whole bunch of different things historically here about, you know, Lara Croft Tomb Raider and The Cradle of Life with Angelina Jolie, the Tomb Raider movie that with Alicia Vikander. Yeah.
Well, this one's voiced by Hayley Atwell, so the animated show, though. You said it was, is it an animated show or you said live action?
This is a live action one that they're specifically announcing.
Okay, yeah, because it's not got Phoebe Waller-Bridge in it. Let's see if we can find her page.
I don't think she's going to appear in this one either. She's supposed to be a writer and executive.
No, producer. I know, but she would show up as writer, right?
I see. I thought you meant like actually visually, like, you know, M. Night Shyamalan puts himself in little cameos.
No, I mean like this, like in her. Portfolio of what she's working on, because, you know, they don't just list actress, they also list writer, director, under your IMDb, so producer, Killing Eve.
I guess it depends if people have updated. I mean, this news came out on May 14th, which is 2 days ago, so if you think in the era of the internet, it would be instantly updated, but maybe the intern was out sick this week before, and they couldn't go update the IMDb's.
Well, I mean, sometimes I update IMDb too, right? So I think it's crowdsourced, right? As well. It's like Wikipedia.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. Good to know. All right. And then I guess we can tandemly talk about the next two stories, which are from Jonathan. The first one is that the three-body problem has been picked up for additional episodes, not an entire season. So I guess they want to finish the story, but they don't want to extend it for another 10 episodes. Probably was a very expensive show to put together, right?
I don't fully understand. I didn't include the link here because I didn't know that it was notable enough.
Yeah.
In our two-man show here. But that 90s show is coming back for what I perceive to be a second season. And if you and I are normal people, would say, oh, second season, right? No. The teaser trailer says part two comes out in like July and part three comes out in like October, November.
Oh, really?
So I'm going to assume they're doing something here. So I don't fully understand. This article here from Variety says renewed, not a season two, it's additional episodes instead of a new full season order. I'm like, what exactly are they doing here? Are they going to call it a part two? And then the next thing would be part three until they're eventually done.
How many episodes was the first one?
I believe it was 8. So
I'm looking at 90 show. Am I spelling 90?
So if they come out with like, let's say 4 more episodes for their new thing, I'm like, that's probably part two. And then 4 more episodes after that, well, that's part three. And if you combine the two sets, it's 2 full seasons. Might be something, I don't know if it's, strike related and carry on effects from that. I don't know if it is, you know, there's new agreements because of the strike, and they're like in Hollywood, they're playing games like, oh, it's not a new season, so I don't have to pay you the new fees. This is just additional episodes. You know, like there's a bazillion different ways in which the people who count the beans make sure that they continue counting their beans and not your beans.
So the first season was 10 episodes.
Oh, it was 10. I thought it was 8, but yes. Okay. I'll take it.
And then they have 11 and then just have a 2 for the second season. But I guess maybe they're doing a season 2 in 2 pieces.
Maybe.
Right? Yeah. Like a la Prodigy. Right. And then you won't be able to watch it anywhere because they won't bother showing it anywhere.
Because they'll dump it and then try to sell it to like Warner Brothers to put on HBO. And they'll be like, no, actually, now it's going to be on Tubi.
Well, at the end of the day, like I said, said many times on this show, like TV shows get picked up by stations, right? And if they pitch it and nobody picks it up, then it just dies, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That happens with shows all the time. I mean, obviously they don't make them, and you know, ahead of time, but I guess that could be what happened to Prodigy. Maybe Space or whoever was going to sci-fi, who was going to show it, just sort of went, or I guess it would have been Paramount, really, technically, right? Decided not to show it, right? But that is coming out somewhere, right? Prodigy? season two?
Yes, they put season one on Netflix. I don't think they've announced a date for season two to arrive, but that was the intention. It was like, let that be a little amuse-bouche before season two arrives.
So you can watch season one on your version of Amazon.
I think it went to Netflix. Let me take a look.
I guess we better have to put Star Trek in front of it because Prodigy doesn't come up with anything otherwise.
I put in Prodigy and it came up as Star Trek Prodigy 2021, 20 episodes. That sounds about right.
In the Just Watch or?
Oh, no, sorry. I went into the actual Netflix app itself.
Yeah, here in Canada, it's on CTV, it says. And then it's on Apple TV here to buy. So
you all don't have it in Netflix over there?
No, not that I'm aware of. Yeah. That's why I kind of wondered. I think Jonathan mentioned that it was only coming to the United States of America when we talked about that before. All right. And the next video that Jonathan gave us was a trailer for The Rings of Power Season 2, which looks pretty good. I guess that's Sauron, the guy with the blonde hair that's walking menacingly towards the camera.
Yeah, I think Sauron is like a trickster. Because historically, you know, like this is the prequels era before he becomes just the guy in the
Rings.
Yeah, and so, I mean, there's people having fun with this in the comments of like, you know, how he's basically, you know, Superman Clark Kent sort of thing, just puts on some long hair and some pointy ears. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, where did he go? I just see this normal elf. I don't see Sauron anymore.
Well, I guess he's an elf, right?
Yeah, I think he's pretending to be an elf here in the trailer.
Pretending to be an elf, I see, okay.
I mean, he's walking around in what appears to be elf gear and looking very nefarious.
Yeah. I guess he kind of got demented by owning the rings or whatever. Is that the idea? Or
where did we leave off? Did he cast first ring? What did he... They were working with that metallurgist, right? To try to figure out how to cast the ring.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, you need to go watch like a recap video before this comes out on August 29th.
Yeah.
I need to watch one of those like 3 minutes. Where do we end up? Because like I experienced it, you know, it clearly didn't fully set into my head exactly where we left off the last time. But I'm pretty sure he like figured out how to make the ring with that other guy or stole the ring that they had just cast. They did something that was a little cliffhanger.
Yeah. I mean, it gets confusing because like... Rings of Power 2022, here it is here. The epic drama set thousands of years before the J.R.R. Tolkien's The Hobbit. Yeah, so let me see if I can find an episode summary here. Might trigger our memories. So the last episode says, Season 1 finale, new allegiances are formed. Where the Eye, survivors of the cataclysm, try to find safety. The Harfoots confront evil. Durin is torn between friendship and duty. Adar considers a new name. There you go. So I have no idea what happened in the episode. You're supposed to watch it again, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they definitely teased the Balrog, but unless they're going to pull a, well, you know, he woke up for a midnight snack and then he went back to sleep before he shows up in Lord of the Rings, Fellowship of the Ring. I guess that was just a long-term tease towards Fellowship of the Ring. I don't expect
the Stranger, is that the dude that becomes Sauron? Because he was called the Stranger in the guy wandering around like lost?
No, that's the guy who becomes Gandalf, I think. If you're talking about the very large guy.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of. Nuri's running around with?
Hmm? Nuri, yeah, 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 yeah. He was with the Harfoot that are, I guess they're eventually going to become hobbits.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, and there's somebody here named Adar. Yeah, who knows? It's all confusing. We'll have to go watch a YouTube, you know, recap thing. Such an exciting podcast today, I got to tell you. But speaking of, you know, following up on things. So is the next piece that Jonathan gave us a link to is called Dune Prophecy, which I think is a prequel to the Dune movies, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially Rings of Power or House of the Dragon, but for Dune, is my understanding. Right? Because they say it's like 10,000 years. They're just barely setting up the, what do they call the ladies? The cult?
Jezza something.
I'll take your word for it. I believe that sounds right.
Bene Gesserit. That's what it is. Bene Gesserit. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it looks like Denis Villeneuve's vision, right? It's not like they've redone the sets and stuff, right? So that's kind of cool. Right?
Yeah, it's it's one of those things where there's just a cool visual style here. It's set so far in the past that they can play with a lot of stuff. Similar, I think House of the Dragon is a little closer because it's like 100 years or something, or fewer than 1,000 for between it and Game of Thrones. I forget the exact amount, but the online sort of reception has been so it could be kind of like Game of Thrones-ish, right? It's about setting up for the prophecy to try to make it happen like they were trying to do right until Dune starts.
Right. Well, according to Wikipedia, the Bene Gesserit is a fictional organization.
That's what they'll want you to think, right? Just like Section 31 or something, or the Obsidian Order and a bunch of other places, other organizations.
Cool. All right, well, we're at the main part of the show where we talk about something Star Trek-shaped related, and this week we are talking about Star Trek Discovery Season 5, Episode 8, I believe, yes, and it's called Labyrinths, I believe?
Labyrinths, with an S at the end. This feels like it needed like an octopi. Or the plural of labyrinth is labyrinth, like fish. It's very awkward to say labyrinth. doesn't roll off the tongue that easily.
No, it doesn't. So yeah, it was an interesting episode. Obviously, a puzzle to be solved involving a labyrinth, including the trail of popcorn that the lead character has to use to get back to where they came from. Right.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What's your elevator pitch?
I tried to get cute with this one. I'm not sure I stuck the landing. I put, Michael has to navigate the labyrinth of her own mind while the crew of the Discovery prepares for the gelatinous Goblin King to attack.
The Goblin King?
Yeah. So spoilers for some of the other things that will come up. I think this was definitely a little tip of the hat to the 1980s movie Labyrinth, which stars Jennifer Connelly and David Bowie.
Yeah, right.
Having the Breen be kind of goblin-esque, right? And certainly the fact that they're antagonists, they have a green color. I threw in the gelatinous piece because that is really feels like a racial slur sort of thing that Rayner uses to describe them.
Mm. Yeah, so I could go with, everybody's talking. I don't hear a word they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. Famous Glenn Campbell song, not written by him, of course, but so interesting sort of plot. I mean, like, typical gotta figure stuff out, and I don't know if I could nail a trope down. The only one I was thinking about was when Kirk wakes up on the Enterprise by himself and everybody's disappeared, right? Except in her case, she's not alone in that. Book is there too, but it's not really Book, it's a manifestation of her mind portraying Book, right? And she has to solve this is Michael Burnham, by the way, has to solve the riddle of how to get out of the labyrinth of her mind, right? And get to the last clue. It's kind of funny that it's a bit like Ready Player One, where the puzzle, kind of ends up, no matter who the person is, it kind of does a mind trip on them in the, it reveals the golden egg at some point, right? As it would in a video game.
I know the in story takeaway is like, the test was like Michael needs to learn that she can't do everything by herself. I feel like, sure, but outside, the real test was Michael needs to learn to just like slow your roll for 5 minutes and think about the situation instead of immediately jumping in and trying to take care of stuff. It's like, maybe just, lay back and stand back and see what happens and let it sort of gel a bit before immediately jumping to something.
Yeah. I mean, she's always sort of, this character's always sort of done that, just sort of been very impulsive and just sort of like, I mean, right from the, the mutiny in the very first episodes or whatever, right, of the series, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then ending up in Starfleet jail on a shuttle being transported. Which they still write out of Rogue One, by the way. Right? She gets rescued on the way to jail, right? Or she gets extracted on the way to jail, I guess. Yeah, cool. And then what? So what? I mean, the one thing I heard. I don't think we've heard. Have we heard the, you know, the red alert klaxon sound before anywhere in this show? I can't remember. But you know, when they were sort of at red alert there.
I got to think about it because I know we have, but I think it's where did that originate? Because the show in the background, the like red alert that started way back, maybe like you know, the movies for the original series.
Oh no, this is the sound from the original series. The when the red alert, the wah, you know.
That was, so it's like the 60s TOS, not the movies, motion picture and so on.
Yeah. Yeah, mm-hmm. Predates the movies, yeah. Yeah, that was a Kirk moment for me. Like that was, you know, yeah. And then in the library there was an Andorian librarian. Did you see that?
No, I don't think I noticed.
First scene. When she first arrives and she's talking to the lady there, the Beyonce looking lady. Actually, I didn't see who that actress was. Did you happen to catch it?
I did not catch it. But she did have I don't know, I guess call her like the librarian, perhaps.
Yeah.
You know, she had my quote, which was when they were calling the very first time to say, hey, you know, we've got this thing. We'd like to request permission to come. She basically says, like, hey, you need to make sure you follow my exact instructions to the letter. And then my quote, which is, the archive is not responsible for any damage, dismemberment, or death that may result in your failure to do so. It was kind of like the, you know, you got to sign this waiver to get on the Disney ride.
Was her name Hyrel, or is that another? Is that
one? Hyrel, I believe, was the name. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, that's painted by Elaine Jukatko. I'm not sure where she's from. From Surreal Estate. What do you know? Not that I've ever watched that. Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Because I mean, there was all these. Oh yeah, because Maul is there, and again with the Starship crew, like. You know, I guess the actresses that they could sign for the episode, for the five episodes or whatever is left, you know, I find that funny that, you know, they've spent all this time with all these people, you know, for four seasons. And then in the fifth season, they just, you know, put a couple of red shirts in the driver's seat. Right.
It's so weird because out of universe, there's reasons, I guess, that you just described. In universe, it's a little weird because you have, you know, these hero characters who definitely should want to be along for it. All right, maybe Saru is like, hey, I can actually, you know, settle down with my lady and do whatever. I'm like, yeah, that's cool. I totally forget what Detmer and Owo were up to.
Yeah, they're driving the Enterprise from the mirror universe back to the repair station, the Starfleet, whatever, museum.
But is that actually where they left? Because I could have sworn that, you know, Ensign 1 and Ensign 2 took over before that.
I think Detmer was in the... I thought Owojo or whatever her name is. I thought she was in the first episode.
Right. Owosukun Owo is...
Yeah.
So Owo. it would have made sense if they, like, hey, you know, this is our opportunity to go, you know...
Well, that's... So Michael just sort of says in a voiceover, oh, by the way, I'm getting Detmer and Owo to take the ship back to dock, right? Space dock. At the end of the very first episode of this season, and then they just were never on the show again. Right. Whenever the Mirror Universe Enterprise was here, was maybe the third episode. Mm-hmm. Let's go back in time and check, because Janal was the dude in the Red Directive was the first episode. Was the first one not a Mirror Universe one?
No, it was like the second or third episode because we already got to see Locke and Maul.
Yeah. It must have been the second, you know, Twin Moons maybe. Because Janal was the third one. That was the one with the guy takes over her body, or takes over Culber's body. Yeah, I think it was the second episode. Anyway, whatever. I'm sure Keen will correct us. Thanks, Keen.
Well, the other sort of interesting thing is that when you have new person one and new person two at the con and the helm, like sorry, operations, I guess, or in the helm, like, you know, they hesitate. And I'm like, yeah, because as far as I know, from their perspective, like, I'm just here with this captain, right?
Yeah.
I don't have the personal connection that Detmer and Wilsakun would have. So when Michael, you know, says, do this thing, they kind of look at each other. And I kind of felt like saying, did I stutter? Like, do the thing. Yeah. it's like, we will either all die or I'm definitely throwing you in the brig, right? Like, you're defying my orders. Just do it.
Well, I wonder if maybe they came from Rainer's ship, right? Because he had a command, right?
Yeah, they probably backfilled from there.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows?
Because I don't think they were they in the crew get to know everybody thing that Rainer did with Tilly? I felt like we stuck not only but primarily to Discovery crew that we've been with and a few other folks thrown in. I couldn't remember if these two folks actually were part of that montage.
I don't think they were, because, I mean, you and I would be looking and going, why do we care who these people are? We're only going to see them for like 3 episodes, right? So not like they're going to be around for a while. Well, I know how I could tell if it's the second episode, because what's her name was in it? The one that came back, what's her name? The half-robot, half-android woman character. Anyway.
Arium? Are you talking about that one?
Whatever. Yeah, and it's funny. One thing I was thinking about this is whenever it doesn't matter if it's not a Star Trek thing, right? But whenever somebody gets into like this one of these states where there's a program running in their mind, or they're in a Vulcan mind meld or something, or they're trapped in they're unconscious and they're traveling through, you know, the Quantumania world, or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. You know, disconnecting is always fatal, right?
If you die in the game, you die for real.
We can't wake her up. Exactly. Yeah.
But at least Book had like the right idea, right? He immediately said, I'm going to go in there and help her. And he went and put his thumb on the touch ID thing and it didn't work.
Yeah.
So at least he had like the right idea, right? He answered the natural question of, can they put more people in there to help? And was like, nope, the creators, the scientists thought about that.
So that card thing, like, it had nothing. We had, you know, the Bayezid card, that had nothing to do with this episode?
I thought it was the library card.
The library card.
So that they would get. So, I mean, the Breen just showed up, you know, and barged their way in. I'm a little disappointed that we didn't see like heavy damage to their ship, because they made a big deal about how difficult it was to get in. Discovery's, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know how the Badlands work. You know, there's an argument of like, well, Discovery's smaller, it probably doesn't get hit as much. But if you make an analogy to, you know, seafaring vessels, a small little boat is going to have more difficulty than a big ocean liner, and all things being equal.
Then again, it can be more stealthy, right? So, you know, because it could navigate through all the harshness, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The smaller one, I mean, right?
Yeah, yeah. And they do take advantage of that. That was my pew-pew-pew, the Badlands battle leading into what I'm going to call the crop dusting escape, with the plasma leaking from the nacelles and them jumping at the same time to make it look like
they exploded. A Han Solo escape, yeah. You know, going out with the garbage.
yeah. And I used the crop dusting because I immediately thought of, are you familiar with this term, crop dusting? Maybe it's an Americanism.
Well, I know what crop dusting is. It's where you fly over and you drop.
Oh, I mean, but like, not the literal term, but as the slang.
Oh, okay. No, I don't know what that
is. It's the slang. It's for like, you know, farting in like an area and then leaving immediately. And especially if it's like passing by some other group of people. Or the other one that I've seen it used a lot is when people like fart in the elevator just as they're about to get off. So crop
I've
dusting,
never done that. Jaime, come on.
That crop dusting is a real thing that people do, and it did feel sort of what Discovery was kind of doing here with dumping the plasma so it would ignite and explode once they jumped in the Breen ship, you know.
Well, I never knew there was a term for it, but now I know what that action I've been doing all these years, that it actually has a name. So that's good to know. You learn something new on this podcast. There's a lot of good reasons to listen to this episode, this show, right?
See, I'm curious. Like, this is such a basic, you know, human thing that I have to imagine that there's a Canadian slang term for it.
No, I don't think we just go sorry and
just more upfront about it.
yeah. Well, you know, we have the silent but deadly, and you know. That's, you know, you just don't admit to it. He who smelt it, dealt it kind of one, you know, you ever heard that one?
Yep.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I'm sure crop dusting is a term up here, but I just hadn't heard that it has a name, right? Things you learn. And I got a little, like, when I stopped the show at one point and rewound the dialogue to see what Michael Burnham was talking about when she said, and Jamal would have let an Itarok eat us, like that came right out of left field. I mean, I know who it is. It's the Culber character, right? But I guess that big giant monster thing that was chasing them had a name. Itronok. Do you remember that?
I don't.
She was talking a book in the middle of the whole, the hallucinogenic book, right? The simulacrum, right? And she said that, and Jamal would have let an Itronok eat us. Or what does that mean? I don't know. That, unless it's like those big giant things, but it's weird. Just a weird line to be in the middle of the show. Especially, you know, you really have to think about it to catch up on it, right? Yeah. And yeah, that's pretty much all I've got for my stuff.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Did you have Easter egg stuff?
Well, that was sort of the Easter eggs. Was the red alert klaxon?
Oh, okay, those are the
Andorian dude, right? Kirk and my Star Trek trope that's being pulled out again was Kirk waking up on the ship by himself and has to puzzle his way out of it. Like that happened to Kirk a few times, right? One time he was in the zoo, another time he could hear this buzzing, but nobody else could hear the buzzing. And then what happened was they were traveling at a really fast speed, and so they sped him up to. So they could communicate with him, and then everybody else was just sort of frozen. That was another similar one where Kirk had to puzzle his way out of Solo, right? Figure it out. Which I guess answers the question I've been asking and we've been asking is, you remember in The Next Generation, the first time Picard says, I'm going to go on an away mission, number one says, no, you're not. You know, because you're too important, you should stay on the ship. Well, because that was the thing in the original series, it was always Kirk that went on the away missions, right? And he would always take his, you know, second and third command with him, right? But which is a dumb management, you know, thing. Like it's like the three executives can't travel in the same plane kind of deal. But it's interesting that in this case here, it's always, you know, it was always Riker that went on the away missions, or it was always in this show, it's always been Michael Burnham on the way missions. She never sort of sits at home and lets anybody else go and do the work, right? Well, I guess she did a few times, right? She left Tilly go do stuff, right?
But like under protest, I mean, even Rayner has called her out, I think, in this case. But I think this sort of makes sense in universe because the change that you're describing of like, yeah, you know what? Like we don't let the captains, you know, YOLO their way on these... You know, these dangerous planets, we send down somebody who's still just as capable, but ultimately not the decision maker, right?
You just don't make them wear a red shirt anymore, yeah.
Yeah, so that makes sense, like, by the time you get to Picard and Riker's era. But Michael, despite doing the time jump, is culturally the same as Kirk. So she would have grown up under the, like, I just assume Giorgio constantly went down on the planet,
she's,
right?
She's Spock's stepsister, yeah. Okay, so that would have been the normal thing to do. Yeah, I guess so. Interesting.
And, you know, if you were like, well, but it's like new Federation, I'm like, yeah, but it's like broken Federation. This is like, to draw an analogy to, another, you know, sci-fi property. This is like the Jedi Knights when you have Luke running it, where it's like, he kind of only had these books and a little bit of training along the way. He wasn't really in the heyday of the Republic and the Jedi, you know, knighthood sort of stuff. So he's kind of winging it a little bit. You kind of get the impression the Federation post the burn is kind of winging it a little bit because it was so disruptive that they're putting the pieces back together. So yeah. If your captain is like, I want to be down on the away mission, I guess so. Sure. Why not? We run a kind of a loose ship here.
Yeah.
I also had some Easter eggs. I put down the comprehensive guide to Talaxian hairstyles. Neelix being the most famous Talaxian that we've met.
Where was that?
That was when the librarian, would you say her name was Hyrel, was talking about some of the artifacts that they have. Or maybe Michael was looking through the and made the statement.
Oh, in her talk at the beginning, you mean?
They were somewhere in the library, and I don't remember stated it, so I didn't put it down as a quote. I just noted that somebody, it was either Michael or Hyrel, the librarian, said that there was a comprehensive guide to Talaxian hairstyles.
Okay. Considering that Neelix didn't really have much hair, right?
I mean, I'm going to assume, you know, that either there is, by the time of Discovery, there was more interaction with the Talaxians over in the Delta Quadrant, or Voyager brought home, you know, all sorts of material that Neelix brought on board, you know, his personal collection, you know, his guide to hairstyles, his recipe books, probably Talaxian erotica, like, you know, there's probably a bunch of stuff that he had on his USB drive.
On his microtapes. Come on, we talked about this last week.
Yeah. And the other thing I wrote down was, I was like, oh, this is definitely you know, tip of the hat to the Labyrinth movie, was the statement that you know, they say, oh, can we do this thing? And Hyrel, the librarian, says, we don't have a dungeon, right? Because they're like, oh, you're going to throw us in the dungeon? Like, we don't have a dungeon. We have an oubliette. I'm like, oh, my goodness. Like, that is such a deep cut. That is definitely a Labyrinth thing. Like, these are real things, oubliettes. Mm-hmm. They're not technically dungeons because they're basically just a hole in the ground with a grate on top. It's not like an area you can sit in or lay down. Like, you're just standing constantly and you just sort of forget people. And then oubliettes were mentioned a ton in Labyrinth, the 1980s movie.
Yeah, and I just typed it in wrong. Oh, oubliette with OU. A secret dungeon accessed only through a trapdoor in its ceiling. Hmm. Yeah, she said she said we'll throw them in the dungeon, but then she said we don't really have a dungeon. Cool.
Yeah. And did you have any big questions?
No. Well, I mean, we still don't know if maybe my theory about her being pregnant is wrong, but yeah, and we were all right about her desire to bring back Locke, right? And she's convinced the Breen, like with no proof of science or whatever, that she can bring him back if she gets the knowledge, right? The progenitor's knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was not, I don't think it was really any sort of major things here. How did the episode, I just finished watching the episode like 2 minutes ago, but how did the episode end?
So they negotiate because, you know, Michael and company get the final clue. They negotiate with the Breen, who the Breen are using.
Yeah, and they say they're not going to blow up the thing, and then they do. They say they're going to do it. Oh, and she kills, or Maul kills, the uncle, right?
Right, the Primarch. I forget his name. Rune, maybe? Yeah. R-U-H-N? Run? Yeah. Rune? And when they escape and fake their death, the destruction of Discovery, it damages their navigation system, which causes the spore drive. It causes, I guess, essentially Stamets to misjudge where they needed to drop. And so they've dropped in the wrong spot for where they intended to go from the map. The finalized clue gives you access to the holographic map, and they're damaged too, to make it even worse. Mm-hmm. Which I guess is maybe a good segue into my big question is outside of the universe, which is, what was the writer's reason for introducing the Red Directive concept? Like I thought this was going to be a much grander mystery. Like, you know, Kovich like kept just getting in the way and not telling them what the point was of what they were doing. And they made a big deal of like, you do what you got to do. And yet they've like really hemmed and hawed, like, should we break the Prime Directive? Like, I said, yes, Red Directive says absolutely. If you need to go, you know, throw some iPods at these people who are praying to this temple, this little tower, like, yes, go do it. If that's what it takes to get the job done, if you need to, you know, throw this person into a volcano, you do it. And in this case, as much as it would suck to lose this, you know, wonderful library and all the people on it, I'm like, you absolutely sacrifice them. There is no question. That is the right decision to make. Because instead, what you've done is you've now given the green the opportunity to destroy all life. And you know it will happen, right? Like, you saw the future when they got stuck in that time, that timey-wimey stuff. I'm like, you know exactly what happens. Like, does it suck? Like, I don't want to burn. I don't want to be the person who burns down the Library of Alexandria, but I will absolutely do it if it stops World War III, right? It's like, oh no, I'm the one who had to do it, but like, this is for the greater good. And so for that, I'm like, dramatically speaking, why did the writers even make up this Red Directive thing? Like, I thought it was going to play a bigger part to the series, but it really hasn't. It was like a mild inconvenience for like an episode and a half.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's interesting. Now that you said that, maybe it's going to spin back up again, right?
I sure hope so, which is why I brought it up here instead of just, you know, quietly seething at it. I bring it up as like, what's the reason? And I hope there will be a reason at the end, or that it will tie up nicely, you know, with some pithy statement from Kovach.
Yeah.
That he's like, oh, you went to got this thing. Hey, thank you for solving. You know, that wasn't the real thing, but what? And then it ends. It's like, oh, he's playing a game within a game.
I didn't have any big questions from this episode at all. So just how did it end? I guess that was my big question. Remind me now. Yeah, they're because they end up in the middle of space and they've got 5 hours to fix the warp drive or whatever, right? And that's kind of where we leave them.
Yeah. The disadvantage that I thought about for, or I should say the decreased advantage that Discovery would normally have. So normally Discovery can just jump wherever it pleases because of the spore drive, right? That should be a huge advantage. In this case, because this, you know, treasure map stuff was set up with only the technology and lifetimes that was available to the scientists roughly in the Dominion War era, right? They couldn't like disperse it all that far, right? Like, we've seen that it takes time to get around and do these other things. So in this case, since Discovery ended up in the wrong spot, you know, if the final location of the progenitor stuff was like, oh, it's way over almost at the edge of the map. Oh, okay, whatever. Like, take your time, fix it, because those Breen sure as hell aren't getting over there within the next 10 years. We got plenty of time. Instead, it's like, oh, crap, it's obviously reachable via normal warp drive. And while we can get there pretty fast with our spore drive, we have to make sure we actually fix it first, right? It's not like, I'm in a race with my neighbor and my neighbor left a day ago. I was like, whatever, he's walking to get to New York. I'm flying. I could wait a few days and leave, you know, why would I hurry? And then they don't really have that advantage, is my point here, that the spore drive isn't as helpful to them because you're playing in a much smaller sandbox that was available during like the Picard era.
Cool. All right, well, we can move on to our watch list if there's not much left.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you got?
Two items. The first one, I'm actually doing these in reverse order from the notes here. The first one I did mention in our recent episode of More Than Just Code as being a nice little crossover between the material normally covered between MTJC and Spockcast, and that is Google's Gemini API developer competition. Related to Google's big I/O keynotes and et cetera. And there's a promotion where developers can compete for all sorts of prizes, including a DeLorean, if your app is the best one. And the promotion ad stars beloved Doc Brown, Mr. Christopher Lloyd, as the person who's trying to convince everybody that they should take part in this.
Mm-hmm.
It was really kind of cool to see him there. You know, they do it as like as if he's hacking together with this like multi-monitor setup. He's got a No Place Like Home, and it's actually, what does he put? Is he put 127.001? Yeah, there we go. No Place Like 127.0.0.1, which is the local host address.
Cool. Yeah, there was T-shirts and during COVID saying stay 127.0.0.1.
Mm-hmm.
Local host.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool.
And the other thing I have is the first season of X-Men 97. All episodes are now available, all 10 episodes. And I highly recommend it to people who are fans of the 92 era animated series. They just drop banger after banger with every episode. It is very much a you know, a work of love for the fans. Definitely something.
Is it worthwhile seeing it if you're not seeing the original series?
I think it would be too difficult to get into if you come in completely raw. I think you could do one of two things, depending how much you wanted to invest. Of course, since all of the episodes are available on Disney Plus for the original 92 era series, you could just binge through all of those and eventually make your way to X-Men 97.
Okay.
Or I don't have a link right now, but there are lists online of like which episodes should I watch to get up to speed, right? Like if you wanted to actually watch it, kind of similar to when Star Trek Picard came out, there were people who were interested but say, hey, I never watched Voyager, I never watched TNG. And some people say, oh, well, here's like the five or six episodes you have to watch to understand. You can do that sort of thing. Or there are various lengths of recaps of, you know, the X-Men series in 3 minutes, 15 minutes, or 30 minutes. You could maybe find one of those and then try it out. Because it does just like they just started another episode from where the last one ended. Like it says, I assume you know everything or the general details. Let's go. You're walking into the middle of a season is what it feels like.
Right.
So for somebody like me who did see, I think I'd said I didn't see every one of them. I was surprised that there were like half a season to a season I hadn't seen, but I kind of knew the gist. I saw so many of those episodes before that I knew the major beats. But it's really well done. But again, it's really such an exciting thing for people that people are like, hey, will they do Spider-Man? You know, there was that 90s animated series for Spider-Man. Maybe they can do a Spider-Man 97, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
So, highly recommend it. It's pretty well voice acted as well. Of course, people will say, hey, it was fun seeing Wolverine's actor come back, voice actor and Rogue and stuff. I think I will point out that Cyclops is really well done in this series. I think they do him a pretty good solid considering he's a guy who's normally viewed as sort of plain vanilla and boring with the much more fun like Wolverine as the more fan favorite. And I think special shout out to the work that they did with Magneto, and Magneto's voice actor is like super good. He's got a handful of speeches that are just wow.
Cool. All right. For me, I watched the Peter Jackson, Let It Be. I'm calling it a 2024 version. It's basically, so my favorite album by the Beatles is Let It Be. It was actually recorded before Abbey Road, it was recorded before Abbey Road and it was released, afterwards. And I believe that was the one that Phil Spector did a mix on, and people have mixed opinions about it because it was basically put together from the tapes that they had recorded, right? Because McCartney wanted to make this movie in Twickenham Studios, and they filmed stuff on Abbey Road, and this famously was the one where they did the concert on the roof until the police came and had them stop. And the Peter Jackson Get Back documentary basically found all the original footage. And so Peter Jackson went in and restored it all. And so if you've seen the Get Back series, you've seen all of this kind of footage. However, the movie Let It Be was released sometime, you know, in the 70s, right? And it basically was shelved. It was kind of like, you know, it's arguable because the Beatles, it was kind of when historically George Harrison walked out, and it's not really portrayed in the movie per se, but and I think it was filmed probably in 16mm or 35mm. It's pretty grainy and stuff like that, even having been restored by Peter Jackson. So I have a bootleg copy of this movie. I've had it my entire, like since the Napster days, right? And I saw it back in the day. Can't remember if I saw it in the theater first or on TV, but so it's my favorite Beatle album, and then it's also one of my favorite movies, and because I've seen it 1,000 times. But it was nice to see it again restored in all its glory in the TV format 4x5, right? It's not widescreen. Like I said, if you've seen Get Back, you've seen it. But this was the culmination of that series of recordings. That this was actually what they produced back in the day as a sort of moment in time of the Beatles before just before they broke up, right? So, because I mean, Abbey Road album was pretty much Paul McCartney and George and Ringo, because John was kind of sort of out of it by that time, right? So the whole side two of Abbey Road is a big long connection of songs that were mostly put together arranged by McCartney, right? So historically, so Let It Be, if you haven't seen it, it's on Disney Plus, just came out like a week ago, so check it out, enjoy it like I did. And then I do want to see The Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. I'm hoping to see it in IMAX, maybe this weekend, maybe tomorrow, who knows. But yeah, so I'm just looking forward to seeing that one. I don't know, it's I've been a Planet of the Apes fan, not since the very beginning, because I didn't see the kids at school used to talk about it, and I remember there was Planet of the Apes playing cards that people would trade around. And then I remember when it was on TV for the first time at home, and they showed a making of the Planet of the Apes, like how they did the makeup and stuff like that before the movie. So, and that's another movie. The original Planet of the Apes movie I've probably seen, I don't know, umpteen times. And then the subsequent movies I've seen once or twice. And then there was a whole 70s TV show with a couple of astronauts and the apes and that stuff. So this is kind of the evolution of the second sort of version of Planet of the Apes. I think starts with I don't know if the Tim Burton version is sort of in canon, right? Because this is the James Franco raising Caesar as a baby with John Lithgow. He's working on Alzheimer's and stuff like that, and he ends up teaching Caesar how to speak, and then Caesar grows up, and then there's a revolution, and so the War of the Planet of the Apes I think was the last one that came out. So interesting to see this one. And I believe that Nova, who's a character from the original movie, I believe she can speak in this one. So, and they kind of realize that, she can talk. So, yep. And if you don't know the gist of the Planet of the Apes, it's basically the astronauts who leave Earth and come back, and they go way off into space. So that whole interstellar kind of time warp thing where they come back, they haven't aged, but the whole world has aged like 300-400 years or whatever. And in that time, the apes revolted and took over the Earth. And so all the human technology is kind of buried away, and they don't talk about it much, And Charlton Heston plays an astronaut who comes back in time to find that, what he thinks this planet, he lands on this planet, which is run by apes, and he doesn't realize it until the very last moment of the movie that in fact it is Earth. It's just been taken over by apes. So, and that's when he slams his fist into the beach and is sad.
I feel like it's one of those things where even if the kiddos haven't seen the Charlton Heston original, it's that final scene is such a part of the culture that I think people will use that internet meme anger at things without actually, like, they get the gist of like, I know how to use it. I know what it means, but I don't actually know the context.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's an interesting, if you've never seen the movie, it's that moment, and it's the Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father kind of moment, right? Like it was one of the first movies. It was like 1968, I think. Kind of like he doesn't say anything. It's all visual, It's all visual that he realizes this. And you know what? It holds up as a movie. Like I hate to say it, but like as a sci-fi goes, it's right up there with Alien and Star Wars and all those sort of classic, sci-fi movies, right? I'm surprised that wonder if was it on the list of stuff that I think it was on Neil deGrasse Tyson's YouTube video that I talked about a couple of weeks ago, right? Where'd my lost my browser window? Where'd it go? It's funny, when I was on the Zoom call earlier, I couldn't get rid of this one window on my Safari, so I ended up just pushing it off to the side. How you shove it in the corner of your window or your Mac, and now I can't get it back. But anyway, so because I've lost all my pages that I had saved, because how you never close tabs. I don't know about you, but I never close tabs.
Oh, you're one of those. I regularly close tabs. If I need to keep on to something long-term, I'll end up bookmarking a suite of tabs.
Yeah.
This is for, researching, Swift 6.0. Oh, yeah. This one is for OpenAPI 3.5, that sort of thing.
Yeah. What do you do with them?
It, at least on Chrome, you can do bookmark all tabs. I need to check to see if Safari has a similar problem.
Oh, I don't use Chrome.
Bookmark all tabs, and then if you've named the tab group, it'll name the folder that. So if I really need to get back, like, that's the only way that I found to not hoard tabs.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and check that out. While I'm typing, did you, I mean, Jonathan was upset that I said that he was America's science guy. How do you perceive Neil deGrasse Tyson?
Is he not America's science guy? I mean, there's Bill Nye, I suppose.
Well, Bill Nye is like the kid's science guy, right?
Yeah, and he's like Seattle's own, where he's from the region. Why, is he like actually Canadian or something? Like, I'm a little unclear on the controversy.
Bill Nye or Neil deGrasse Tyson?
Yeah.
I think he's the... I mean, I went and saw him with the number one fan, Xavier. We saw him do a talk at downtown Toronto, and that's the first time I ever saw the picture from Voyager, I think, where the little tiny dot on the, it's like the edge of Saturn, and you see this little tiny dot with another little dot orbiting it, and that's Earth, and that gives you a real impression of how small we really are. Yeah, so here's the list that he doesn't have Planet of the Apes on here, which I'm surprised. I should ask him about that one. So Black Hole, The Matrix, The Martian, The Blob, Contact, Interstellar, Gravity, Back to the Future, A Quiet Earth, Arrival, Europa Report, Armageddon, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Deep Impact, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Independence Day, Terminator, 2001 Space Odyssey. Oh, I'm surprised that he didn't have Planet of the Apes in there, because it's technically a sci-fi space movie, right?
And the going to light speed or near light speed and coming back and time has gone on without you from relativistic effects is
relativity.
It feels like a miss. It feels like a snub.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
He doesn't feel like dealing with the whole apes thing, like just talking about the what happens when you approach the speed of light and you return to Earth.
Yeah. Well, it's not his channel. It's somebody else's channel. So I don't know if I make a comment, if you'll see it. Cool. Oh, people have put other movies in here. So cool. I guess that's it for another week. So hey, time if people get in touch with you, where would they find you?
I'm on Twitter as at Dead with the Hair.
Should have guessed that. That would have been my first guess. Anyway, my name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra, and you can find me on Threads, which is probably the place I like the best. I'm also on Mastodon, and I'm on the Twitter machine or the X machine, whatever they're calling it this week. I don't know. So until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to the Spotcast Podcast. If you want to find out more about the podcast or see the episode show notes, visit the Spotcast website at spotcast.com. You can get in touch with us on the website or follow us on Twitter at Spotcast. If you have feedback or questions, send us a tweet with the hashtag AskSpotcast. If you like the show, please consider recommending us to a friend, writing a review on iTunes, or pledging any amount at patreon.com/Spotcast. You can find details on how to help us on our website, spotcast.com/sponsor us. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the future.
Twitter machine, right? I was going to say the threader machine. That's a loom.
The threader machine. The threader. The thread-o-matic. The Ronco thread-o-matic. I call it Twitter machine. Stromo used to call it that, right? The Twitter machine.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, that's where I picked that up from, yeah. But I've been saying it that way for 10 years now, I guess, right? Or something close to that. I have to go back and listen to those first podcasts. So 10 years, eh? We're coming up on 10 years in August.
Yeah, that's pretty
you
nuts.
And I.
That's pretty nuts that time can go by that fast.
Mm-hmm. Well, I kind of wonder, like, I've got a picture of you on my phone. You know, I took the first day we met.
I'm pretty sure it's 2014. No, did we start the podcast, like, immediately after 360, or was it the following year? Because maybe it was 2013 that we met. I'm not sure.
I'm looking here because I have a picture of you on the, like, we were sitting in the restaurant, and yeah, it was, I took your picture on September 7th, 2013, because I was showing you the app we were working on, right? And I just took a picture of you to upload it into the app, right?
Mm-hmm. At the restaurant, this is when we were getting like the nachos and stuff?
Yeah, but Jonathan Penn. Yeah. Mm-hmm. September 7th, 2013 at 10:53 p.m. And there's no lens information and there's no... Oh, you know what? This may not be right either. There's no lens information and it's a square crop. Huh.
Does that mean you...
360 was in August, right?
Yeah, I believe it was in August.
I think I just saved this out of the app. Well, let me see if I've got a pictures 360 Denver, right? No, it was Littleton, right?
Yeah, it might have been Littleton that year.
Yeah, the first 2 years I went were in Littleton. I wasn't really taking pictures too much back then. I mean, I've been taking pictures my whole life, but nope. Let's try Colorado. How do you spell Colorado? Colorado, 445 images. We can't blame Greg if it just doesn't work either because he's not... Oh, here. So, okay, I have a picture. Oh, a picture in the airport. Yeah, September 7th, 2013. So that was the first day we met, right? Lone Tree, right?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Lone Tree, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think they had like some beers that had that name. I think that sounds like the region.
Yeah. Oh, somebody drew a picture of a, I think we were doing like a hackathon and I made a 3D Starship Enterprise for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I took a picture of the what do you call the cars that go down into the mines? Is Colorado Mining? I guess it is, right?
Colorado School of Mines, yeah. In Golden, I think.
Yeah, so September 7th, 2013 was the first day that we was there. Weird. I thought it was in August. Who knew? Yes, we missed 360. And we're looking forward to the One More Thing conference, which is where I'll be in June. How about you? Where are you going to be during WWDC week? And what will you be doing?
What is it? Is it the week of the 10th, right?
Yeah.
I will be at my desk watching the live stream. I might have conflicts, so I'm going to watch what I can, try to take notes as best I can. I have done that before. Sometimes like, oh, I can't move this meeting. It's important enough for me to not miss it, but it is not so important that I'm going to be actively participating. And so I'll just mute the keynote, put on the subtitles, and then sort of watch it in a separate window.
Yeah, that's a good point. I totally forgot about it. We'll have to book an appointment to tape with you and Mark for More Than Just Code on our impressions, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's
and I'm going to be in California Tuesday to maybe Mark and I can do it in person.
Oh, there you go.
We did it once driving in his car because we couldn't find a coffee shop or whatever to sit down. Right.
Right. Right.
So we ended up I just tethered off my phone and we just did it in the car with car noises. Yeah. I forgot about that. We'll have to do do our pre WWC as well. Right. Which we normally do.
Yeah, especially if they clear the decks of some more stuff, they release some more things, they would say, oh my goodness, I can't believe they released this early. Yeah. What will they actually, you know, by comparison, if this didn't make the cut, what's going to be in WWDC?
Yeah, so fun. I was doing the Codico bootcamp where I'm a mentor, and it was all the content that I wrote for the course. And I mean, it's the stuff I wrote for Codico, and we use it for the course, but... I got to show them what their stuff did a screen sharing thing with my Vision Pro so they could see what the apps look like on an actual Vision Pro, because it's hard to see in the simulator what they really look like in real life, right?
Mm-hmm.
That was fun. Cool. All right. Well, I've had a long day. I'm going to go sit down and maybe I'll do some more coding, but I'll probably just veg for a bit.
All right.
So I got to finish watching the Pop-Tart movie. Have you seen the Jerry Seinfeld Pop-Tart movie on Netflix?
You know, I have. We can talk about it as a pick perhaps next time. Unfrosted is what you're talking about.
Unfrosted, yeah. And it's funny because, talk about Easter eggs, eh?
it's such a weird film that has, like, all the comedians.
Yeah.
So, let's make that a topic or a pick or something next time.
Well, I found out about it because he was on, Jimmy Kimmel, right? Being interviewed.
He was making his tour. He was on SNL making fun of the fact that it was like yet another place that he was making an appearance on to talk about it.
Oh, I haven't watched last week's episode yet. I don't know where it was, but I think I was busy working on the latest course, which I'm doing, is on Swift Data. I'm writing a course on that right now.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So, watch list. I'm just setting up next week's show. Whoever I get. Frosted. Cool. Yeah, thanks for reminding. Alrighty. I will talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.